What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
This is Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
I was going to lead into the show in a completely different way, but right before it got actually the countdown, when we record this, Vic said twice with emphasis, how about them Blue Jays? Now, I know we talked about...
How about them Blue Jays?
Yeah, we talked about this last week, and you made it quite clear, oh, you know, we have American listeners, No, I couldn't care less. I care less about the American listener, yes. But this is amazing. We're going to Game 7. Okay, we're going to Game 7, and I don't care what sport it is. I don't care the fact that we're cheering for Toronto. We live in Toronto. We follow the Jays forever. There's nothing like a Game 7, Vic. There's nothing like a Game 7 in any sport. So, yeah, good on them last night, facing elimination, which was... of course, Sunday, and now they play Game 7 tonight to face, man, those Dodgers are good.
And Toronto, there you go, American listeners. Toronto is a fun city. And Toronto is a fun city to be in. But that's what I was actually just going to add to that. Even, let's say that this was Yankees in Seattle. A Game 7, you and I would be into it, right?
Sure.
Of course, not the same way because we're not as invested. We're invested in the Blue Jays because we're fans and have been since we were kids.
Right.
But at the same time, Game 7s are magical. Especially when you're punching your ticket. One team is going to the World Series after tonight, Ryan, and that's super exciting. And I know this is a hockey podcast, but you and I both watch a lot of sports. And today feels pretty special in the city of Toronto.
I always find it, too, there's something like a rite of passage that if we do something to do with hockey, say you and I did something to do with baseball or specifically with football, everyone always says, oh, I know this is this show, but we need to talk. Let's just talk about whatever, right? It's sports.
Right.
Good on the Jays and good on Seattle. Good luck with all the respect against the Dodgers. That team is just insane. Anyway, welcome to Pucks and Seven. Here we go. Hockey talk. Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash.
Hockey time.
Right. Brought to you by Rogue Sports. Coming up later on, James Nichols of New Jersey Hockey Now. We both know James. Talked to him a number of times over the years. Talk about the Devils. A great season. I spoke to Tom Fitzgerald on the weekend. Got some good insight from him and the GM of New Jersey, where he's at with the team. Great start for them. So we'll talk to James in a bit. He'll also get into the 77-second segment within the segment, which we do with each of our guests. Coming up, lots to get into. Mark Scheifele. I want to talk a bit about Martin St. Louis. Saw something on the weekend that really caught my eye about a game before that. The interaction with him and the players on the ice, which you do not see very often as intently as that. So I want to get into that, too. And Scotty Wedgwood and the Canes. But let's begin, Vic. Oh, boy. So the Edmonton Oilers, if I were to say to you that at this point, say in the offseason we were speaking, and which we didn't, say, okay, Edmonton, McDavid signed his extension. Not a huge, certainly term contract and not a huge financial commitment, but he signed the two-year extension, kicks in after this season. He hasn't scored. Leon Draisaitl is, I think he has one even strength point. Evan Bouchard is not doing anything on the back end. This team, Victoria.
No, Ryan, one second. Yeah. Let me interrupt. Yeah. Evan Bouchard is doing a lot on the back end. It just isn't good. He is committing.
That's kind of what I meant.
Right? He isn't doing anything. He isn't contributing anything positive. I'm an Evan Bouchard fan, and I know that he has been slammed for years for, you know, how he plays defensively at times, boneheaded plays, not the effort that he should be putting in, but he's so gifted defensively. But this past week for Evan Bouchard might be the worst week in terms of how we have watched him play. Thank you for letting me interrupt. Please continue.
Oh, no, no, no. And that's a good point because he is contributing. He's coughing everything up. He looks terrible on the back end. Mm-hmm. But this whole world is crazy as we live in it. But this is even more ridiculous. The fact that I just said to you, McDavid doesn't have a goal and Leon has mm-hmm. one even strength point. Bouchard is off the board. He just has assists for the other team, the opposition, which is last time right. I checked, not the right stat you want to have at the end of the game on the game sheet. This to me, and yes, it's a struggle. There are teams right now not off to the starts that many of them wanted. San Jose is a completely different story because the expectations were not and are not like they are in Edmonton. But this right now, and you and I talked about this, and I'm sure we'll do it again for most of this month, maybe even into November. All these points that Edmonton is not getting, all the games that they're not playing well, this structure and the cohesiveness in the group that we do not see. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's the middle of October. It doesn't matter to me. This is not a good indication, Vic, and not a good sign whatsoever for this. Again, the two-time defending Stanley Cup finalists that we're seeing right now in Edmonton.
And they've lost three straight, and yeah. they looked awful doing yeah. it. Yeah. They're really sloppy. They're mm-hmm. not engaged. The two best players still look like they're two best players, but they're only still two skaters out there. Yeah. And I know McDavid doesn't have a goal yet, but he does have seven assists. It's not like he hasn't contributed. He's not done.
And that's
McDavid
right.
Like
he did say last year or the year before
he cast.
Yeah. And he did say he was tired of scoring goals. Remember when he said that? He just wants to help people. Right. I think he said that not too long ago. No, but again,
that was tongue in cheek.
I know.
Stuart Skinner has been okay. Let's be
He's
fair.
Been okay.
He's been okay. He actually has been spectacular in a couple of games that won mm-hmm. the one shutout before they went on their losing streak. It's not, this hasn't, you can't hang this on him. And I know Oilers faithful always want to hang it on Stuart Skinner, and you can't.
Yeah,
this is very much a group effort. Boy, oh boy, do they need Zach Hyman back. And coming up now, they're facing the Senators who are struggling, the mm-hmm. Canadians who are playing very well, but still are banged up now and
Exciting
are still the
team.
Canadians.
Exciting team,
but not the Colorado Avalanche is my point.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
And then after that, they have the Kraken and they have the Canucks. So you need three out of four here, buddies, to get this going again, because I know every year we talk about the Oilers getting off to a slow start. I think mm-hmm. since you and I have started doing this, it's been the routine, right?
Yeah,
celebrate American Thanksgiving, Oilers suck, right?
Yeah.
And then they get mm-hmm. good, and then they make the playoffs, and then they're playing in Game 7 for a Stanley Cup, right?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But that's going to run out at some point, because there are other teams in the West now that are playing well, like Utah, like mm-hmm. Seattle, right? These other teams that maybe we weren't anticipating as much. And hey, Oilers, I know you have two of the best, but you still have to make it into the playoffs to go on that run.
Yeah.
So you got to get your act together.
I think McDavid shouldn't have signed. I think you should have just waited till free agency would have hit July. Well, no, I'm kidding. But you never know,
right?
And hey, give credit, though, where credit's due as well. Detroit, the fact that they've won five in a row, this team, the Wings are flying. No pun meant for that whatsoever. They are flying. Dylan Larkin, 11 points, six games.
He's looked like a superstar out there.
Oh my gosh, come on. Yeah, so as much as we're saying, hey, Edmonton, you're not doing well, let's give credit where credit's due to the Detroit Red Wings. They're mm-hmm. playing well. Edmonton, yes, the blueprint for success. Not a good start. Then you either fire the coach or keep the coach, and then you get back on track. And the next thing you know, you're a win away from winning a Stanley Cup, or two wins away, at least in the last one against the Florida Panthers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Remember after the first game, speaking of Detroit, this is a segue into Toronto. When Todd McClellan ripped his entire team after that opening night loss, they looked terrible. He put everybody under the bus. He said, we spent 3 weeks working on what? Nothing. Well, I thought we worked on something, and now we stunk. That team has responded with five straight wins. Recently, mm-hmm. after the last game against Seattle, Toronto goaltender Anthony Stolarz, he teed off on his club. He was getting teed off during the game. He almost got run mm-hmm. over. He, big boy, takes
several
apart
times.
The net. Right? Yeah. So good on him, because the Leafs look listless. They don't have the energy. And Anthony Stolarz, Vic, is doing, he's making saves without his mask. That's what this guy's doing in the first couple of weeks of this season. But if this continues, I would be completely, completely ticked off like he is right now. And I'd still continue to be so, because he's getting no support.
The weekend's affair with the Kraken was very messy. It was messy for the Maple Leafs, for sure. They looked a little bit discombobulated, but that was the major problem, was not necessarily not protecting their goaltender. This isn't the same situation as it is in football where you need to protect your quarterback. But this is somebody, but you can't let them get run over either. Now, what I found so interesting about Stolarz' comments after the game, when he said, you know, I have 275-pound guy or whatever weight it was lying on top of you, not very comfortable. And even the words he was using didn't quite match how frustrated he looked facial expression-wise.
Agreed.
He was even more frustrated than he was letting on.
Agreed.
These two things. He was upset about getting run over. Brendan Carlo is not somebody who is ever going to be accused of being a bad teammate. Okay? He's not. What was he supposed to do when Stolarz got run over in that particular moment? And the Leafs drew a penalty, and now they're going on a power play. Would you have preferred Carlo to get up?
Yes, 100%.
And absolutely not. And then you negate the power play?
It doesn't matter.
And maybe the win?
It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
But we get frustrated sometimes, Ryan.
We get frustrated with players when they act undisciplined.
Isn't that undisciplined? But you are now sent the message to the rest of the league that you're still soft, that you're a very soft team. I think it was Mason Marchment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Marchment.
So it was Marchment, and Stolarz stood up. He looked at the ref and saw the arm go up. So he has game penalty. Mm-hmm. Carlo looked at him, just stared down, didn't even nudge him. Like, you don't have to go after him and kill him like Brad Marchand tried to do. We'll do that. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
But at least show something. Show something.
Okay.
You cannot be a soft team in this league, and forever. Toronto has been a soft team. Craig Berube said after the game, he said, I've been preaching this even more, like enough's enough. Enough's enough. And I'm not a huge fan of Brandon Carlo. I'm not. I remember last year.
Oh, I do. I like him.
I know you do. We're different on that. I don't think that he gives the team as much as other defensemen would. But at the same time, I don't care who you are. If you were, I don't know, I know William Nylander and Matthews wouldn't do anything, but you're a big boy. At least get down, like softly, and say whatever you want to say to him, but show your goaltender that the goaltender doesn't have to throw the net off, put it against to the end boards, and then go after the player. That, to me, is sending a soft, soft message. And
okay, let me counter that. Would it not have been more effective to sit back a little bit and take advantage of the power play, or try to anyway, which they didn't, aside? But then what Stolarz suggested, I want to see our players do this to the opposing netminder. Get in his face. Jam yourselves in his cage. Disrupt his routine. Would that have not have been a better response? Next shift out when the power play's over, right? Because again, you still don't want to lose that opportunity, that advantage.
Okay.
But then later on, go and not run Joey DeCord necessarily, but get in his face and show your goaltender, because they kind of did do that in the third period of that game.
Well, they kind of did. I was going to say, but they didn't do it the next shift. They didn't do it the next shift. And I'm with you.
I would have preferred, though.
I'm not here for anybody to go out to try to hurt somebody. I'm not here for, like you are,
of course
I'm not here
not.
For anybody to go out to try to hurt a goaltender, not at all. But that, to me, again, was a message. Oh, okay. Yep. He just ran the goalie. I'm going to let Stolarz keep this going. He's their most valuable player right now, Anthony Stolarz. He's their most valuable player through these first, what, six games, I think they're in?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Anyway,
good
on.
We're going to move on. One last thing about that game.
Yeah, yeah.
Leafs still could have won that game in overtime.
They could have won the game. Yeah, yeah. They could
William Nylander is my favorite Maple Leaf. His effort letting that goal in overtime and not even chasing him down.
Stolarz alluded
to that. Oh, my goodness.
He said, you shouldn't let that happen. You shouldn't let that
happen.
Some
guys have been around on this team for a long time. That's a quote from Stolarz, and he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, we're going to move on. So, Brad Marchand,
Yeah,
I know you do. Of course you did.
Love it.
He returns to Boston tomorrow. I think the ovation is going to be incredible. There's no hard done at all, because I remember at the end of his time in Boston, he and his agent kept going to Boston late in negotiations saying, look, here's what we want to stay. Here's what we're going to give. Here's what we're basically about said, you know what? No, your worth is that's not how we think your worth is at this moment. And off he went to Florida. Good on him. We all know that
he
video.
He was traded, me. Though.
He was traded.
He
yeah.
didn't leave on his accord.
No. That's okay. So, so there's no ill will whatsoever.
None.
I know Brad Marchand's a great player. But stuff like that is Bush League, the stuff that he did with the helmet. I think it's stupid.
I think it's
stupid.
All right, setting the scene, Sabres actually beat up the Bruins. And on the scoreboard over the weekend, but there was a melee between Rasmus Dahlin and Brad Marchand. And Brad Marchand, if you haven't seen the highlights, went on to take it out on Dahlin's helmet in the penalty box.
Because it's the helmet's fault.
Because it was the helmet's fault. And ripped all the straps out of it.
Yeah.
And it was quite a bit of theater. Dahlin didn't even seem all that bothered by it. He had to actually borrow Krebs' helmet for the next shift because they were on a power play. Oh, because Brad Marchand earned himself a penalty by doing this.
Sure, of
course. So he was in the box continually going at the helmet. Mm-hmm. And he's since been fined the maximum for unsportsmanlike, $5,000, pennies to him. It's still... what have you. My point is, it was a bit of theater. I sort of laughed. It's very Marchand like. He didn't really hurt anybody. The issue beforehand with the cross check was the greater issue to me. But the helmet thing to me, I know you don't like this stuff. You think it's immature. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
You know
but
what
it
is?
Still made me smile.
Yeah, what you know it? What it is? It's tiring. So let me ask you this. If you don't mind that, then why would you have had an issue with Carlo doing anything to Marchman on the ground when Stolarz, when he ran into him?
I didn't want to see him cross-check Marchman in the back of the head
and take
a penalty.
But if he took his helmet off, if he rubbed his helmet, if he took the helmet off, if he did that, you'd be fine with it.
If he did not get himself into penalty trouble I would have been totally fine. But he would have. They would have went, you're there. Four on four, let's have at it. So that to me is why it's a little bit different. Whereas Buffalo took advantage of the situation by not retaliating. They scored on the power play.
Yeah,
they took advantage of it, right? So
Buffalo's
that to me, that's the difference.
Sabres are going to go on a 20-0-1 run, I guarantee you. No, they're not.
Zach Benson, though, watch this kid. He's entering his third year. He's only played a couple games this season because he took a puck to the face in the preseason. He looks fantastic on that top line with Tage Thompson. I'm not saying Buffalo Sabres are a playoff team, Ryan. You know, I don't think that to be true.
No, they're
but
not.
I think they're going to be better because of him and some other players on that team as well. So
believe me, Brad Marchand, he's one of those players in the game that you want to have on your team. You don't want to have him against the opposition. But I'm like, come on, Brad, like enough. Just take it. Go back to Dahlin. Give him a cross check as well and leave it alone. Okay, let's move on. Again, don't forget, James Nichols will join us. Got a question, too, concerning the Devils and Tage Thompson. There's some rumblings as well. I want to get into that with James, or we will, in just a bit. Carolina Hurricanes, again, are they just quietly going about their business? Oh, yeah, they are. They're quietly going about their business. They're the only true undefeated team left right now in the National Hockey League. And this is what they've done. If we want to talk about the blueprint for Edmonton's success, they don't play well, then all of a sudden they turn things around. The Canes just do this every year. They just put up points. Nobody talks about them as much as the Devils or the Rangers or the Leafs, like we were Vegas, go to the West, Colorado. It's incredible to me. And good on them. They're such a good hockey team.
They're very good. They're very well balanced. They're very disciplined. They have good goaltending. Two thumbs up to Boosie, the backup, who was largely unknown, filling in for Kochetkov and spelling off Freddie Anderson when necessary. He's done a fantastic job. And here is my favorite topic, which you're going to roll your eyes at. 5-0, take nothing away from it. Wins against the Kings.
Oh, don't.
Struggling.
No, none of this strength of schedule stuff.
The Ducks.
It doesn't matter.
The Sharks.
Doesn't matter. Well, maybe that does a bit.
The Flyers.
By the way, I wanted to go on. I got something to tell you about that. Go ahead.
So, all right. Now, but you're right. You have to play the team that is set in front of you. So it's not the Hurricanes' fault that they had that easy swing through California, because a lot of teams on the East Coast enjoy themselves when they do that. Here's what we have coming up. Ryan Payton in Vegas, in Colorado, in Dallas.
Big test.
That's coming up this week.
Absolutely.
They come out 2 of 3. Absolutely, tip of the cap. I'm tipping my cap anyway. I'm not taking anything. They're playing beautifully. But you win 2 of 3 against Vegas, Colorado, and Dallas on the road.
Yeah.
Now we're cooking with gas.
You mentioned San Jose, and I don't know if you saw Sharks head coach Ryan Warsawski's comment after their
about
own
the kid?
five-star. He's going to give up one of my children for an effing win. Hey. He won't, but it's just...
No, we don't have to qualify.
It was really good.
A few people were up in arms about
really
this.
Good.
I'm like, he's
come on,
nuts. Man. It's like, I'd give my right arm for a hamburger right now.
Come
no,
on,
you
man.
Wouldn't. I mean, come on. He's taking some poetic license to make a point. And the Sharks are playing competitively, but they haven't been successful so far.
No, they haven't. Okay, let's move through these next few pretty quickly as, again, James Nichols is going to be on about 5 and change.
Right.
Scotty Wedgwood. I know Mackenzie Blackwood's coming back, but it doesn't matter to me. Scotty Wedgwood Woods, your 1A, your 1B, your 1C, your 1, keep going, keep going. 5-0-1, 938 save percentage in six games. He's allowed two or less goals in 13 of his last 15. So we're dating back, obviously, to last season. He has been consistent. I know the team in front of him is very good, one of the best in the game, and that's fine. But you need, at the end of it all, you need to have a goaltender that can make you the saves when called upon, and that you just have the confidence. So the fact that he is doing what he is doing, let's not forget, last season too, the record was pretty good. He split time, of course. He wasn't there for the full 82 games. But this is a great story. I love Colorado. Huge Avalanche fan. Love what Wedgwood's doing.
He's doing exactly what they need him to do.
Exactly.
Fun fact, in ESPN's fantasy game right now, the top goaltender is none other than Scotty Wedgwood.
Scotty Wedgwood, yeah.
Not Shesterkin, not Vasilevskiy.
Well, who else would it be? Who else would it be? It has to be him. It has to be him. Right? He's 5-0-1.
Shesterkin is actually quite close. Yeah. But in terms of like goals allowed, saves made, all the formula pieces that come together, he is number one right now. And anybody who predicted that to start the season or says they did, big fibber.
No, I did not.
Good for him. And the fact that he's holding the fort down and he's doing his job, that just, again, I think it speaks to the quality of the team and the culture in Colorado. But you can still screw it up.
Other goaltenders would screw it up.
He's not screwing it up.
No, he's not. You know who's not also screwing it up is Mark Scheifele. Winnipeg Jets, again, off to a good start. That whole division is ridiculous, as always. It'll be that way through the 82nd game played by all these teams. But good to see him. Aging veteran, and as you have on the lineup, aging like a fine wine, and I could not agree more.
How is he getting better? Because right now, so he broke, congratulations to Mark Scheifele for breaking the Winnipeg Jets franchise record. So dating back to the Thrashers for the most points now, he surpassed Blake Wheeler over the weekend. He now has 813. So you give him a couple more seasons and we're going to be talking about the 1,000 mark. He's still only 32 years old.
Not old.
No, you think about, because I remember him with the Barry Colts and that seems like a million years ago. And then he came up for a cup of coffee, went down, then came up for another cup of coffee, and then he went down. And then he's been a consistent presence ever since. But he scored more points last year than he had in his career, which you don't usually see from a forward in their 30s. Not normally. And now he's actually on pace to even better that mark. And he looks like a man half his age. It's ridiculous. But he looks like a 27, 28-year-old out there.
He has an extra step in his stride, if you will. An extra step in his stride.
I think he's enjoying himself.
He is. He is enjoying himself. And you mentioned, too, about what he did last season, 87 points in 82 games. If you go back just quickly in the last number of years, say going back to 18-19, he's almost a point per game guy. 84 points, 82 games, 73 points, 71 games, 70 points, 67 games. So you're guaranteed almost every single game. If you do the average, you're at a point per game with Mark Scheifele. It also helps too. I know he's playing well. He's happy. His content looks very healthy.
Kyle Connor.
It helps. It helps. And whenever I say that about any player in any sport, I'm not taking anything away from him or her as an individual, but it really helps to have that supporting cast. You can't win an Academy Award. You can't win Best Actor, Best Actress without a good supporting cast. So that's what he has right now in Winnipeg. Okay, last one. Again, James Nichols coming up too. I wanted just to briefly get your thoughts on this. So Martin St. Louis the other night, I think it was the game that Montreal won in overtime. They've been making a habit of scoring late in regulation, then finding a way to win late in overtime, whatever it is. But they're exciting. They're not, you know, coming out of the gate with all these wins. They're not undefeated, but they're playing exciting hockey. There was one clip I saw recently, and he was on the bench, and he was talking to, or let me change that, the teammates, the players, Cole Caulfield, I think Nick Suzuki, and I believe Lane Hutson were all on the ice. I don't know if you saw this, but they were talking directly to St. Louis. They were the ones holding more of the conversation. I assume that they were talking about, hey, here's what's going to happen in overtime. Let's try this. Mm-hmm. Let's try that. But the point of it is that I thought, you know what? You don't see that too often. You see a coach narrating the whole discussion for the most part to the players on the ice. But I don't know if he got maybe 5, 6, 7 words in. And how he looked at each player, Vic, I looked at his eyes. And these are, it's not like these guys are 40, 45. These are guys are in their 20s. They're so
young.
And I thought there is the respect, not only from the players to coach, but also more importantly for me, growing this team coach to player.
He's giving them the opportunity to feel accountable. And I think that's going to go a long way. Yeah. Martin St. Louis, I'm glad you did bring this up because I wouldn't have thought of it. He's creating a culture in Montreal and he's creating this foundation of a culture They weren't expected to be a playoff team 2 years ago, last year. Even this year, they're considered cusp, but they're certainly moving in the right direction. And management right. can do all they can do, but whatever you have to deal with on the ice, and he has a young crew down there, and the more that they feel accountable to each yes. other, to him, yes. to the organization, to the rabid Montreal fan base, the more they feel accountable, the maturity is going to come out, and this team is going to be very good for a long time. Maybe mm-hmm. not this year yet, but they're going to be good. And I like that. The fact that we're talking about the Red Wings, Blackhawks these days, mm-hmm. Montreal, the original Sixers are kind of back in the mix. Yeah, it's fun.
Good on St. Louis. I've always thought he's a perfect fit for a team like Montreal. And I firmly believe as well that a lot of former players, they just seem to have a little bit more when it comes to players and them being coaches. And I think Martin St. Louis has that, so good on him. Okay, we'll take a break. We talked Montreal. Detroit's playing well. Vegas is playing well. Colorado, etc. The Devils are playing well. Also, out of the gate, James Nichols will join us next. We'll dive into New Jersey with James right after this.
Welcome back to Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Madiash.
Again, early still in this campaign. We're not in the first month. That's fine. But just the first impressions you've had by watching this team.
Yeah, so it's funny. You know, it's a familiar feeling. And I just wrote this yesterday and a little bit this morning, too. It's a familiar feeling because we all saw what the Devils did in 2022-23.
Yeah.
And we saw how dominant they could be as that skill rush team. However, then they were, you know, these kids who didn't know any better. And now a few years later, it's the same feeling, just a way more mature approach to it. Mm. They're all business. There's no panic in their game right now, and it's been a great start for them. So you just see, and the word that's been thrown around with this team a lot so far this year is maturation, and you could see it right away. They've matured so much, and you could see it in their game. They you know, maybe don't have the best starts. That's something that they're working on, but there's no panic, whereas they used to let themselves sink into that slow start and then allow those games to get away from them. They're not doing that anymore, and it's really apparent at the beginning of the season.
How much of an impact in the maturation process has Sheldon Keefe had on this group already?
Yeah, he's been huge. And that's the thing, like the calmness behind the bench to not worry about getting down a goal has just been contagious on the bench. You know, they play this calm game. They have this really unique approach that we haven't seen for the Devils, where they're not trying to, you know, score four goals at once. You would see that sense of urgency in their game. And I say urgency in almost a negative way, where they were trying mm-hmm. to do too much. You would see Jack Hughes try to take it all upon himself. He's not doing that anymore. You would see, you know, Timo Meier try to score four goals in one shot, which we know can't happen, right? And he's not doing that anymore. They're just staying simple. They're sticking to their game, and they're not moving away from their structure, which has been huge for them so far. It's really refreshing to see this new sense of maturity that hasn't been present before. And it all starts with Sheldon putting that structure in that we haven't seen. You know, he had his first season with the team last year. Mm-hmm. Some injuries got them down they were a first round exit, obviously. But after this summer and having that first year under their belt and knowing what to expect coming into training camp, it's a totally new vibe around this team.
Need to have a good vibe for this team, and they're certainly doing that. How well does Connor Brown fit in? And also, I was reading a little bit about Leon's advice.
Yeah, he's been excellent. I mean, the number one priority for this team this summer was to acquire depth scoring. And he provides exactly that. And he fits right in. And he said the reason why he picked the Devils was because he felt they fit his skill set. And it's true. He's very fast. He knows how to score. But he does everything. The guy's a Swiss Army knife. He kills penalties. He could go on the power play if they needed him to. And he's just been so good. So both in the locker room and on the ice, he's been a really good fit as a veteran who's been, you know, to the Stanley Cup twice in a row. Obviously, you know, came up just short with the Oilers, but he has that experience. He knows what it takes to win, and he's been, you know, really bestowing that wisdom on guys like Jack Hughes, who he has said, I love having this guy around. He's been great. And he just does all of the little things right. And, you know, the other day he laughed, right? He got that shorthanded breakaway. And mm-hmm. he goes, you know, Leon told me always, you know, go backhand forehand. And I thought I'd try it and it worked. So he's been excellent. And, yeah. You know, I can't say more good things about Connor Brown, who can play anywhere in the lineup, top six, bottom six, any role. He's been really, really good for this team.
When you get advice from Leon, I'd say take it, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing for Connor, though. If he gets another chance at that, the goalies are going to know what he's going to do. So he's got to figure out another move with that. You mentioned the Hughes, Jack, Luke. Again, you got to add Quinn to that mix. How much traction is this Quinn in uniting the brothers at some point together in New Jersey? I mean, I know it's been talked about and, you know, here and there and there. It's just kind of smoke and mirrors thing right now.
Yeah. You know, I wonder, I obviously, you know, with the Rutherford comments that started the mm-hmm. smoke, right. And you know, there's been some fanning of the flames since then that keeps that storyline coming. It just keeps popping back up here and there. Everybody asks Jack about it. Everybody asks Luke about it. I do wonder if, you know, you look at the assets the Devils have. They have all of these defenders who they have not offset yet. Mm-hmm. You know, Seamus Casey's a guy who's not playing right now, but he has an NHL future. Simone Nemitz is playing well this season, but they're loaded on the blue line. You wonder if there's, you know, something in the future for him on the Devils or it's somewhere else, right? He would mm-hmm. be, I think, probably a main piece in a Quinn Hughes trade. They have that kid, Anton Siliev, who's over in the KHL, who's supposed to be a monster. You wonder if he's going to be, you know, involved in some sort of deal. I understand wanting to be careful with this and wonder, like, is this just all talk or is it possible? But for some reason, all of these assets that the Devils still have on the blue line, right? There's only six positions. And then, you know, there's a seventh defenseman. But they have so many defenders that I do wonder if they're stockpiling some of these assets to use later. Otherwise, they would have been used already, right? Why didn't they, you know, maybe do a little bit more at the trade deadline last mm-hmm. year when they mm-hmm. were going to the playoffs despite the Jack Hughes injury, right? So, yes, right now, I don't think there's anything imminent. But at some point, I would not be surprised to see this really come to fruition.
Anything to do with, and I've been reading this and just kind of keeping the ears open with this, Tage Thompson and possibly with the Devils. I mean, I was hearing things that the Devils would be all in on something like that if that were to actually come to be.
Yeah. I don't know, like nothing on the player specifically, but I do have a feeling that, you know, whether it's Quinn or someone like Tage Thompson, that this would be the season where the Devils
right big game someone yeah yeah
and
yeah.
I referenced earlier this in this show, this feels like 2022-23, right? Well, what was the mm-hmm. big move they made then? Timo Meier, right? So now they need another big piece in the top six. I think they've needed it for the past few seasons after losing Tyler Toffoli. And a guy like Tage Thompson, look, if Buffalo's gonna sell, I mean, the word around the Devils is that they need to get a little bit bigger, they need to get a little mm-hmm. bit stronger, right? Who better than Tage Thompson?
Tage Thompson,
40 goals and work really well in that top six, whether he plays center or moves Jack Hughes to the wing, or if he plays on the wing for Jack Hughes. So I think he would be a great fit. Obviously, it would take a lot, and that's maybe what I mentioned with, you know, hoarding these assets that could be moved. But yeah, someone like, you know, Tage Thompson or even an Alex Tuch, who might cost you a little bit less, that guy would be a great fit too. So I would be, you know, on the lookout near March at the trade deadline for the Devils to do something big, because I think this year they know we got to take another step. And in doing that, you know, Fitz does need to provide as well.
Staying with contracts and potential things down the road, where are things at with the Jacob Markstrom discussions on a new one?
Yeah. The word is multi-year extension. He loves it in New Jersey and they love having him. I think the relationship, as far as, you know, the personalities has been a perfect fit. He loves being there. And they love having him. And you know, it's interesting, like you do wonder how long you want to go on this when it comes to the AAV. I think he wants something north of $5 million or at $5 million. You saw Jake Allen sign that 5-year mm-hmm. deal, but he only signed for 1.8. So it's, you know, you're able to eat that at the end of that contract if it doesn't work out long term. I do think Allen has the work ethic and the fitness to be able to last the duration of the contract. But you wonder a little bit about Jacob Markstrom with some injury history, right? He has been injured last season. He's injured again now. So you wonder, you know, how much they want to commit long term when it comes to those injury scares. But there's no doubt that when Jacob Markstrom's at the top of his game, look, I think he's a number one goaltender, no doubt. But when he's at the top of his game, you do see Vezina-like performances.
Sure, this I agree.
He was excellent in November last year. I mean, he was the reason why they went on that absurd streak of games where they didn't win any more than three, but they won three, they lost one, and then they won another three. And a lot of that had to do with Jacob Markstrom's performance. So if he never got injured last year, I was putting him in the Vezina conversation with Connor Hellebuyck. I don't think anybody was taking it from him, but I think he was, you know, he was going to be on Team Sweden. He was going to be their starting goaltender. And, you know, there's a reason why they want to keep him around long-term. He's a game-breaking goaltender. And so I keep hearing, yes, long term, but the sticking point right now is just how much is that going to cost them per year? We know the cap's going up. He knows that. His agent knows that. So right now it's just trying to figure out where that sweet spot is.
Let's talk Metro Division quickly. The only true undefeated team left in the league are the Carolina Hurricanes. Are they the cream of the Metro crop?
Yeah, they certainly are. And you saw what they did to the Devils in game one. And, you know, I'm interested to see how the Devils handle that in the second meeting. I don't think they meet again until February, but they did not look like how they have in the past four games, where there's no panic in their game and a much more mature approach. I think game one, they had to get the jitters out, and it was a tough test going into their building and knowing that this is where they were eliminated, and always having, you know, that to overcome, that hurdle to overcome in the Hurricanes was maybe a bit weighing on their minds. But now they got, you know, they got that out of the way, and they have a couple more meetings, and yes, they're the cream of the crop. You know, nobody works harder than that team, right? They're a great team. They're built well, but they don't necessarily have superstar power like the Devils do, right? They have Jack Hughes. They have Jesper Bratt. I put Timo Meier in that category as well. Nico Hischier. Sure. No, and that's no knock on the Hurricanes, right? They have really excellent players. Sebastian Aho is a star. Andrei Svechnikov is an excellent player, right? Seth Jarvis, excellent player. Yeah. Jacob Slavin, right? These are some guys who are constantly talked about in the underrated category, though, whereas the Devils have these players who are bona fide superstars. So once they get that structure and work ethic, which I have seen over the past few games, down as well as the Hurricanes do, obviously a Rod Brindamore-led team is always going to have that structure. I think they'll go toe-to-toe with them no problem, and I would love to see a series with them again, because I think the outcome, even if it's the same, the series would be much different.
The Islanders drafted Matthew Schaefer, number one overall. From what I've seen and read, the guy is just an incredible human being at such a young age. We all know the things that he went through off the ice and continues to go through. I saw his grandfather saying something the other night about all that. Anyway, the sky's the limit for him. Just your thoughts on him and coming into the league, being a number one pick, but also with all the things that you've gone through at that ripe age. That to me is just something that he's matured in leaps and bounds, I think, so quickly, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's you know, it's funny. I was just talking to a couple scouts about this guy because I haven't seen him firsthand too much. I saw him in a handful of games. But from what I have seen, I was like, oh my goodness, like this guy's skating like he didn't just come from the CHL. He's skating like he just came from he played in the NHL last year. Like, I can't believe how good of a skater he is. I said to somebody, I said, you know, there's been a lot of comparisons thrown around in his game to Cale Makar. I'm like, are we premature here or are we bang on? And, you know, a couple of scouts were like, listen, I don't throw this term around loosely, but we're looking at a potential generational defenseman here. And I said, really? They said both on the ice and off the ice. Generational person, for sure. Talent-wise, I might not have said that 6 months ago when he was, you know, still recovering from that injury that he suffered. Mm-hmm. But now that I've seen what he can do in the NHL, we might be having that conversation of, yes, this guy might be a generational talent all around. So you were bang on with how great of a person he is off the ice. I mean, I think upwards of 10 to 15 Islander players wanted him to live with them, which, you know, you don't hear storylines like that too much, but it was a big deal with how many people were like, come live with us. He's just a great person. He's overcome so much adversity early in his life. And that's just made him, you know, a great person, you know, as an 18-year-old. He's almost like a veteran in the room, where you can see captain's material in him in the future and maybe in the not so distant future.
I'd
right?
say, this yeah.
guy, he's coming to the league and taking it by storm. Yeah. You know, I wanted to not believe the Cale Makar comparison so early, but I mean, I've had three or four scouts say to me, no, it's pretty bang on. So
it's a real deal.
It's incredible to see.
Last one before we get into 77 seconds with you, McDavid signing that extension, 2 years, 25, AAV 12.5. Your thoughts on that? The first thought that came to your mind when you read that, but also too, some of these contracts. I know there's some still you signed for seven in long term, but the Lane Hudson deal, that's a bargain. A lot of these really star players seem to be signing for less money, even though it may be a long term. But now the focus really is, okay, the cap's going up, but I really want this team to win. Yes, money is important. Money is one thing. But the McDavid deal is exactly that. He's giving Edmonton, saying the money you're saving, it's right back in your pockets. Just kind of your thoughts on the landscape. Are we going to see more of these contracts with these star players going to be for an AAV a lot less than many people think?
I think you should. You know, I think that's one of the things is when Connor McDavid signed that deal, I literally, the first thing I thought was, oh, the players are not going to love this, right? Because everybody wants a little bit more. But you know who does love this? The Edmonton Oilers. Because Connor McDavid, being the leader that he is and the captain of that team, said, look, sign me for the same deal. The money is not what I need. You know, what I do need is I need to win a championship. Build a team around me. I'm giving you the pathway to do that. I'll sign for, you know, a short-term two-year deal. Yes, maybe I'll cash in later. But right now, we're so close. We need to win. And now that gave all the other 31 GMs in the league the ammunition to turn around to their star players and be like, if he could take less, the best player in the league, so can you. So let's do that. And then you turn around and you look at what the Montreal Canadiens are doing. You know, like you mentioned, Lane Hudson taking less, right? And that's over an eight-year deal. Now he's working at 8.8, I believe, something like that. When I was projecting him after Luke Hughes's contract, you know, that was signed 7x9 to make upwards of 10, maybe 11 million dollars.
Easy.
And when it came to 8.8, I was like, wow, that's surprising to me. So right now, all the GMs have the ammunition to be like, Connor McDavid took less. Are you telling me that you can't do the same? And I'm wondering about that. And in the devil's scope, I'm wondering about that with Nico Hischier in 2 years when McDavid has 1 year left on his contract. I really want to know what those negotiations are going to look like. But I think that you're going to start seeing, or you could start seeing some of these star players taking less money than they would have originally. I think Jack Eichel is another example. No reason why he couldn't have just signed for $15 million, but he takes $13 million, you know, and that's, again, on a rising cap when it's going to be upwards of $105 million in a couple of years. That's actually not too bad of a number. So I think it takes a little bit from both sides, a little bit of give to get. In this league, especially with a salary cap. So, you know, the fact that Connor McDavid did that for the next 3 years, because he's got that 2 year extension doesn't kick until next year. For the next 3 years, GMs have all the bargaining power to say he took less. So can you?
Yeah. Selfless act by the best player on the planet. Okay. Let's get into the 77 seconds. Again, there's no timer on this. We just do seven questions in 77 seconds. So here we go. Most underrated devil on the team in your mind.
Great question. On the team, in my mind, most underrated right now, I'm gonna go with Luke Glendening. Okay. He has come in. I mean, this guy was a PTO player. You know, he converted on a contract, league minimum. But the Devils, you know, they brought in a guy like Juho Lamico, who was over in the SHL. He was projected to be the, you know, full-time bottom six center. There were a couple other candidates who could have taken over that role, but he came in and, you know, through his ability to win upwards of like 65, 70% of his faceoffs on any given night, his, you know, relentless work on the penalty kill and just his defensive game overall. Right now, I don't think enough people are talking about just how good of an addition Luke Glendening has been to the New Jersey Devils. You know that, you know, obviously the Jesper Bratz and the Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier are going to be the motor that revs the engine. But the work that Luke Glendening puts in the bottom six, he's gelled really well with anybody they put on his line. Paul Cotter is another guy who maybe could be in this category as well. He's been really good. But Luke Glendening, to me right now, stands out as probably the most underrated devil because he just puts in such good work every day that maybe goes unnoticed because he's not, you know, maybe lighting it up on the score sheet.
Fashion's a big deal in the NHL. Who is the best dressed devil?
Timo Meier, hands down.
That was quick.
Yeah, hands down. Every time he has something new on, I mean, it's so diverse too. One day it could be a nice suit. The next day it's a nice turtleneck and slacks. And you're just like, this guy has great fashion. I think, you know, it's the Swiss gene in him.
It's gotta be.
He looks excellent every day, so it's Timo Meier for sure.
Oh, I'm envious of those guys. They make anything look good, right? They make anything look good. Three-on-three overtime. There's been discussion of extending it, the shootout. What's your ideal overtime?
You know, the players don't want more time, and I get it because they're gassed, right?
Yeah.
Nathan MacKinnon was on the record saying, like, that would be tough because listen to me huff and puff now, and we've been done for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe extend it maybe another 2 minutes.
Okay.
I think you'll see some more tired legs giving out, and you know, that could lead to more goals. So I think 7 minutes, try it out at the AHL level, maybe try it out at the ECHL level, see how that goes. Add 2 more minutes, not 5. And I think we might be working with a solution there, because that extra 2 minutes could really make all the difference.
Do you like the shootout or no?
No.
Or do you want it? Yeah, you want to see games done in OT. You're like me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Eastern Conference sleeper pick this season.
Good question. Sleeper pick. I think after Todd McClellan called out the Detroit Red Wings.
Good call.
After he called them out, they've been playing real well.
They have.
You know, I know Tampa maybe not has had the best start, but they overcame that hurdle the other day. That was an impressive win to me. And you know, I love Dylan Larkin. I think he's an excellent player and he's a great leader. And they're given all of the leeway to the kids that Sandin Pelik is in. He's playing real well. They just lost Lucas Raymond. That's tough, but they're winning without him right now. Patrick Kane, I heard, looks really good. I haven't given him a close look, but I heard he looks really good. So I think that, and he's playing with, you know, obviously he has to bring it there. You know, James and Riemsdyk has been a nice addition for them. So I think they might be a sleeper here this season. The addition of John Gibson was huge for them.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, if he can continue to just give them steady goaltending, I think look out for the Detroit Red Wings.
Who wins the cup?
That's a really, really tough question.
a lot of options. But,
yeah, I have the final with the Oilers, and I think the Devils could make it.
Edmonton back again.
I think they're back again, and I think the Oilers win this time.
They're going to do it. Okay, and then McDavid's contract looks really good. That's what I was going to say. If Edmonton wins this thing, and then he looks back and thinks, oh, maybe I should have just held out and not signed till we won and then signed somewhere else, whatever. Anyway, okay, so Edmonton against New Jersey. That would be good. Last one. Do you still have plans to teach?
What, hockey?
You got your teacher's college.
Yeah. No, listen, I'd love to stay in the field I'm in now, so hopefully I can stay here. So, yeah, hopefully this is it for me. So it's been going well so far.
Awesome. James, I've had spoken to you over the years a number of times. This has been great. Appreciate this. Love your work as well. Keep it up. And, we will do this again soon. I've certainly enjoyed it.
Appreciate it, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.